afternoon and welcome everyone to another edition of Renegade Radio. I'm your host, Andy Lowe. We are brought to you today by Renegade Concepts and the good folks here at Business Radio X. Each time we have Renegade Radio, we're looking to meet with business professionals who are getting outside of conventional and traditional norms to create success in their personal lives and or their business. And we've got a couple of ladies who are going to talk about some unique business elements today that I'm pretty excited to visit with. We have Stephanie Trumoss from Trumoss Communications and Tammy Hansen. She's from Leading Sales Solutions. Ladies, how are you doing today?
Doing just fine.
Great. Thank you so much.
Well, Stephanie, let me start with you. So I'm going to start with a non-business question for a second because I know that you're an alumni of the University of Georgia, as am I, and maybe you can just share with us your thoughts. How do you feel about what happened in South Carolina last weekend?
Well, not real happy about it, but I was actually in Colorado in the mountains and didn't get to see it. I just heard secondhand.
I understand that. You know, it was a little disheartening to see the Bulldogs lose like that. But then again, you know, maybe some people can say that we've kind of gotten used to that because it seems like for the last, you know, decade and a half or so, that's become a tradition. We can't win it when it really matters, you know?
That's true.
All right. Well, let's move on to a happier topic. Instead of talking about football, let's talk about communications. And specifically, let's talk about websites. So tell me a little bit about your company, about what you do with websites, marketing, and in particular, QR codes.
Well, Trumoss Communications started about a decade ago, a little bit more than that, to meet the needs of my clients and their basically graphic design needs. And we branched into web design to help out a local cattle rancher. That was our first website. And from there, we've grown to do websites for small to medium-sized businesses, not just in the Atlanta area, but across the Southeast and even some national nonprofits that we work with that have some great success. What we do is we assess the needs of what the business is and make sure that their needs are being met in their web design. Are they mobile? Is their clientele, are they marketing to people that are using smartphones? And if that's the case, we help them out to make sure that their website works on multiple viewports, being the tablet, the smartphone, as well as on a laptop and traditional computers. So we want our clients to be able to share their information across all the platforms, all the browsers, all the viewports. And so far, that's been quite successful.
Stephanie, what does a cattle rancher do with a website?
Well, I like to say they're in the marketing business, and not all cows are sold as cows. Some of them are pre-cows, and so they sell all over the world to ranchers to help improve their herds. They're Santa Gertrudis breeders, and it's very interesting. I've learned a lot more about cattle than I ever thought I would know.
All right. Well, thinking about websites, because you know, you said that was about a decade ago that you guys started, and about a decade ago, the business mentality was you got to have a website. You know, everybody was kind of getting on board with that idea. Today, I've heard some different questions rolling out of the mouths of people who are getting started in business, and one in particular that that I think is going to be right up your alley to answer is this idea of, do I need a website any longer? A lot of people are moving towards Facebook pages and things of that nature. What's your expert opinion?
Well, I think Facebook's great, and it increases a lot of engagement, but Facebook is Facebook, and Facebook owns Facebook, and they can make changes whenever they want to. I don't know if you've ever noticed how the changes they make affects your personal profile, but I recommend that clients they own their own information. They have it on their own website, and if they want to have Facebook, that's great. Then they push their information to Facebook. They use Facebook to link back to their own website so that they're sharing, but they have their information where people know to get it. They know to go to the name of the company, whatever is on the business card, sharing the information. Not everyone is on Facebook, and Facebook is really not a business portal, even though a lot of businesses have a presence. So you need to have your own business portal on the internet. If you're going to be in business, you need to do it right.
Okay. So let's say that I do need a website in addition to my Facebook page and other social media efforts. We've also seen another shift over the last decade. 10 years ago, nobody knew how to design a website. You know, everybody had to get someone else to do it for them or go out and learn some coding that they didn't know. Today, there are a lot of template sites and pre-designed websites and things of that nature. What do you think? Do business owners need someone designing a site for them, or can they get by doing it on their own?
A lot of businesses get by doing it on their own, but I'm not sure they're well served by that. If they work with a professional, someone that really understands the needs and how to become interactive and be on the forefront to have their website show up in searches on Google. No one can promise you a number one ranking on Google, and if they do, you need to run fast because it's snake oil. Google changes their algorithms just about every day. So if you can be found by the people in your market and have the right information as well as some interactivity, and don't just expect to put a billboard online and let it suffice. You need to have something that is dynamic, being changed, that challenges your visitors to answer a call to action.
Well, that's a good point. Let's dig in a little deeper there, because again, a decade ago, if you had a website, it was a brochure. All right, it was just a brochure online. Now, if you get a brochure online, people might come to your website once and then they never come back, and they certainly never do anything. What are some of the things that create engagement from visitors to your website and keep them coming back?
Well, new information. Blogging, we hear about blogs all the time. And if a company uses a blog, it's not about how you know it feels to do such and such or esoteric things. It's more about the company news or news about the type of business or that affect the businesses. There's a lot of information that you can share. And you can share information that maybe you didn't originate, but you can write something about it so that it pulls customers, clients, people seeking information into your website to find out more about that. So it's a great way to be dynamic and to offer a call to action, to find out more, join our mailing list, and we'll keep you up to date. We'll share our tips with you. And I'm always ready to learn a new tip about web design, about social media, and I find that my clients are well served by sharing tips with people and having people sign up to get further information from them.
Well, as you talk about a dynamic website, you know, one thing that comes to mind are things like video, flash animations. You know, the page moves, shakes, does different stuff. But then again, we've seen problems with load times and plugins and other things. You know, do you recommend putting all that type of stuff on a web page?
I think videos are great. Anything that offers some sort of engagement, videos, photographs. But we're seeing there's a lot that Flash does. But if your business depends on, if your clientele is reaching out to you on mobile devices, remember that iPhones, iPads do not do Flash. And so if your website is a beautiful Flash site, when I look at it on my desktop computer, I go to it on my phone and I get nothing. I had a client that I worked with. They brought me in because they had a beautiful website that when you went to on your phone, you got nothing. Actually, it was a brick wall, and it didn't even have the name of the business. They didn't realize that their beautiful site was not being seen on mobile phones, on the iPhone especially. So that's a reason to consider your clientele. Who is following your website? Make sure that you have something that can be read. And if you do have Flash, offer something different if it's in a mobile viewport. So there's different ways you can do that, and we can talk about that too.
Yeah, here's one of those spots where if I had a paid endorsement, I'd be like, hey, plus one for Android, we could Flash. But since I don't get a paid endorsement, I just have to be a fan. So anyway, let's talk about mobile for a second. So a lot of companies are starting to have websites that are specifically mobile friendly. As a business owner, do you recommend that businesses, you know, make the investment in having a mobile site versus just a standard site?
Well, I think a small business, a very responsible way to go if you're just starting your web design or redesigning, is to do responsive. And a responsive design responds to the viewport. It queries the size of the viewport being the window that you view it through, the iPad, the iPhone, the tablet, the Android, whatever, or the laptop, desktop, whatever size, it's going to respond, and it will change depending on how it's viewed, but still present all the information. So when you go to a website on your phone and it's you need a magnifying glass just to read it, it does nobody any good. So if you have a website that responds and changes so it still makes all the text readable, that's a really setting your website up for future. You want to be thinking about the future so you're not going to have to redesign. If you have a separate mobile site, now you have two websites you have to update. You're paying for two separate websites. If you've already got a website, that may be the way to go, or you can look into there's ways to make your website mobile without having to have a separate site, especially if you're on a WordPress a CMS content management system. There's ways that you can go in and present that information mobily without having it be separate information. So that's something to consider as well.
Well, take us through one more piece of information here that I think is getting a lot of traction these days. A lot of people are trying to understand the buzz around QR codes, and I know this is a big area of expertise for you. What the heck are QR codes? What do they do? And then let's talk about how businesses should be using them to make their business websites profitable.
QR code is not the be-all, end-all. What a QR code is a barcode. It's a two-dimensional barcode that is a trigger. It's a bridge, and it makes it very easy to use a smartphone to visit a website, to send a message, to start a phone call, to go to PayPal. There's so many different things. You can find directions with a QR code. All you have to do is click open a scanner. I keep my scanners on the home screen of my phone, so all I have to do is, one thumb, click, and I have my scanner open, and I can scan anything very quickly. And then I don't have to type. So if I see something that says, go to this website, I'm probably not going to do it on my smartphone because I have to sit there and type it in. But if I can just scan, then it will open whatever the intended message is on my smartphone. The QR code was designed for the automotive industry as a barcode to help, inventory packaging of automotive parts. And it was the original barcodes that we see on our soup cans can encode about 20 characters, 20 numbers, basically. A QR code can encode up to 7,000 binary numbers, 4,000 if you're using alphanumeric, but you really don't want to go that high. Really, the smaller number of characters, the better able to scan the code that you have. And so we can see there's a lot of things that you can do with it. A lot of businesses aren't doing anything but sending people to their website that you can't see on your smartphone anyway. So that's another reason to consider mobile and to consider your whole campaign before you use a QR code, because people think if your QR code does not lead to something beneficial or fun, it's a waste of time. They blame the QR code and they never visit your site again. So you should pay attention to how to use the QR code. Plan your whole campaign from the beginning before you put a QR code on anything. But it's a great way to give a call to action to get people to sign up for your newsletter, your tips. I love it. I think a great way to have it on a website would be if you have a location. If I'm going to a restaurant and I don't know where you are and I'm at your website, if I can just scan a QR code, then all of a sudden I have the directions in my phone. I don't have to type anything. The map's there. I'm ready to go. If I have to type in your address, I might type it wrong and I get frustrated, I'll just go to the place I know. So that's a really good way to use a QR code on a website. A lot of people think, why should I have a QR code on a website when I'm already on a computer? I don't need to be able to get out my phone to scan something. But I think pushing that information into a phone, something that you want to have for people to take with them mobily, or even to have a link to your mobile site, your mobile app. If you have an app, they can download it through the QR code. It's just amazing the different capabilities. The QR codes really use all the capabilities of smartphones, so the sky's the limit.
Yeah, I'm also surprised that the more companies don't embrace this type of technology to get on-the-spot feedback from clients. So restaurants come to mind. You know, I don't see, if I were a restaurant, I would have a QR code on my table so when somebody had a meal, they could scan it. It'd bring them right to my Yelp page or whatever review site. They could put in their feedback right then and there and maybe even receive an on-the-spot discount for having given that feedback. So I'm just stunned that people don't embrace the technology. Do they not know or do they not care?
I think they don't really know, and that's what we're trying to do. And after this show, they're going to know because you just told them.
So if they don't know and they need to reach out to an expert like you, how could they go about getting in touch with you, Stephanie?
Well, you can reach me at stephanie@truemoss.com, and I can answer your email. You can visit my blog that's about QR codes at qrmedia.us, and there's a list of over 250 QR code generators there. So you can find out how to make QR codes and have your choice. Some are paid, many are free. So it's a good place to start. You can also visit my website, truemoss.com, for more information about web design. And
you have a speaking event coming up as well, don't you?
True. I am speaking in November at the Social Launch Conference. In Atlanta at Georgia Tech, and I believe it's the weekend right prior to Thanksgiving. It ought to be exciting. It's a day and a half, and it is just chock full of information for small businesses, and we'll be talking more about QR codes.
And, of course, if you were here in studio, you could simply click a picture of the QR code that Stephanie handed me earlier, and you could get to all our information that way. But maybe what we need to do is we'll put that on our blog post for the radio site. We'll stick your QR code up there. How'd that be for
perfect,
a link?
Perfect.
I love it. Well, listen, I think there's going to be some great synergy, Stephanie, between the things you've talked about and our next guest. Can you hang out for a few minutes while we visit with Tammy?
Absolutely. I'm excited to hear what she has to say.
Thank you so much. So, Ms. Hansen, welcome to the show. I understand you are a sales and marketing guru here. You are with Leading Sales Solutions, and sales happens to be a near and dear topic to my heart. So let's jump in and talk about sales. And I'm going to ask you probably the most basic of questions here because it's just a good differentiator. Mm-hmm. What's the difference in sales and marketing?
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much for asking that. And thank you very much for having me on today. I really appreciate that. So when you look at sales and marketing, and so many times owners of companies just don't have a clue how this all works together, marketing are those efforts where it's generally one way. So you're reaching out and trying to get to people and get their attention, all right, and get them interested. So you may be marketing to them via email nurturing. You may be sending them something in the mail. You are, you know, a call to action on your website. Whatever it is, you're reaching out. So one way marketing is one way. Marketing is also, those activities are also what I call tofu, top of the funnel, right? So when you look at that activity, and then once you get those prospects and that interest going, then it's going to transverse your funnel into the sales cycle. And that's where you have to engage with your customers and prospects, two-way interaction, right? So marketing is one way. You're reaching out. You're trying to engage people, get their interest. And then once you've got that, then you're going to engage them with your sales staff, your sales force. You're going to reach out there and start, you know, communicating with those folks, those contacts, and engaging them and finding out what their needs are and how you can service their needs.
Now let's talk about that top of the funnel piece, because there's a handoff that takes place there from the marketing people to the salespeople, and it seems one of the common pieces of confusion is exactly what constitutes a lead.
Well, okay, so that's an interesting question, and that is a question that I have from so many. Well, actually, I have to tell, you know, a lot of my clients what that is. Once I understand what their business model is, how they're engaging people, and really and truly what they need to do to qualify, right? So it could be different from one company to the next. I'm working with one company right now that is doing a lot of really great marketing activity to a database of 25,000 contacts, right? And they qualify a lead if someone asks for a white paper from their website, and they'll send that to their salespeople to follow up on. I don't actually believe that that's the case. I also get a lot of free stuff that I download from the internet. Does not mean that I'm a prospect for that company. So I'm working with them to understand the dynamics of sending something like that over to salespeople and having them spend time on it when we don't, in fact, really know that that person or whoever it is that's downloading that white paper is really a prospect for them.
We've heard the phrase before that you don't know what you don't know. So talk to me about why it's so important for having someone come in from the outside periodically and take a look at your sales process.
Right. And so, yes, if you think about a business owner who will go out and engage a CPA for their professional services, they'll engage attorneys for their professional services, they do not top of mind think about engaging a sales and marketing expert for their services and expertise, right? It just doesn't happen. You have to make them, bring them to an awareness that sales and marketing is not necessarily a science, but it really is an expertise. And generally, people doing it have been doing it for years. They have a track record of success. That's what you're looking for, is a track record of sales success or marketing success. And so whenever you go in and you start talking to them about the marketing aspect and how that leads to, you know, going into your sales, you know, aspect and your sales process, the light bulb goes on, right? But it's not until you sit down and have that conversation that they really gain that that understanding and awareness.
What do you find to be a more common problem inside of an organization when it comes to sales and marketing? And three kind of come to mind for me. One, is it a problem that you've got the wrong people on the team, so you just don't have the right sales and marketing people in place? Two, you got the wrong sales and marketing processes inside the organization? Or do you find that maybe it's leadership sometimes that's the wrench in the wheel that's kind of holding things up?
Oh, you know, Andy, that is a fantastic question. So it could be one, two, or all of those, all right? But mostly what I see are owners that are micromanaging, okay? And they're throwing so much at their sales and marketing people that they simply are just trying to navigate the new things that the owner is wanting to try. Try this, make 50 calls instead of 30. You know, we're not making numbers, whatever, right? And so it's a vicious cycle. You cannot get in front of that, okay? Then it could be that you have the wrong people on staff. So, you know, in sales, depending on what the job is, all right, if you're taking care of a base of customers, that's one thing. It's mostly a farmer relationship type of person. But if you are doing business development, if you're knocking on doors, all right, which is what I've always done my entire life in sales, all right, and then I learned how to nurture on the backside and obviously keep those customers. But that's an entirely different skill set, right, than nurturing accounts. Well, they may merge at some point, but the expertise to just keep knocking on the doors and knowing what to say to engage people and get their interest, right, that's an entirely different skill set. Too many times owners don't understand that it is different, right? And so they make it the wrong skill set for the job. And that leads just to really a lot of heartache for everybody involved. So for owners, the one recommendation I make, if you are looking for salespeople, right, you may want to engage a firm or a consultant like myself to help you find the right person. Okay. Now, on the other side of this, I also find a lot of times organizations are bringing people in, they're not training them properly on how to sell their company, all right? And that's another thing that I work with owners. What is it that you need to say to a prospect where you're sitting across the table from them that they need to hear from you to feel comfortable enough to buy, right? How do you present your company? They don't have the formal presentation. They don't know how that flows. They don't know what is to be said. They don't understand how to sell, you know, value add. Why purchase from me as opposed to my competitor, right? They're not giving those tools to their salespeople because they don't understand. There's no training, real formal training. They expect people to walk in from the street, have this training. I mean, you may absolutely come in with some great sales expertise and some training, but you still need to understand the company you're working for, the product or service, how the owner of the company wants that product and service to be sold. And then you have to have a process to push it through. Like when you start from marketing, you push the leads into your funnel, top of funnel, and start pushing it down. That's where your sales process starts, right? So it is from a suspect to prospect to lead to qualified. And there's a whole series of things that need to happen. And a lot of times I find that salespeople are not looking for very critical, you know, points in the sales process. Like number one, they don't know who the decision maker is. They may be working with someone they met at a networking event who is maybe a recommender but cannot purchase, and that could potentially leave you holding the bag later, not having a sale and spending a lot of, you know, time and effort on something.
I want to plug on that for a second, okay, because this is an important point. When you talk about not talking to the decision maker, we've heard this from some people that have been in on our Atlanta Sales Talk radio show, some of the executives who many salespeople would consider, oh, it's the CFO or the CEO and thus the decision maker. But those people have told us, you know what, we're not making those decisions. And if people, you know, they work hard and they get in our office and get in our door, all I'm going to do is bump them back down the ladder because I'm not the right person to be talking to. How important is it to know not only who the decision maker is from a standpoint of organizational chart, but who can really pull the trigger on your product or service?
Oh, well, so we don't always assume that the decision maker is the owner, right? So number one, the decision maker is the person who's going to say yes and write the check, right? That is the person that you need to know, all right? That you, whether you are working with them on a weekly or daily basis, you have to know who has the authority to sign the purchase order. They may not be totally engaged, all right, in terms of the sales process. They have to know you. You have to know them, and you have to know that they have the wallet. They can purchase, okay? That's what I'm talking about. If you don't have an understanding there, an engagement, you can absolutely lose that deal because someone, your competitor, does. They established a relationship with the decision maker. They're top of mind, and they've beaten you because you're not paying, well, not necessarily paying attention, but you're putting all your eggs in the basket of the recommender.
Now, in the last several years, we've seen some severe economic shifts out there, and those have led to changes in the sales and marketing arena. I mean, I've contended several times that there are people who claim to be, you know, great salespeople, and they show a stellar resume, but the reality is they were order takers. You know, they were in a time where people had budgets to spend, and it really wasn't selling. You just call somebody, they had money to spend, and they were buying products and services. What have you seen really change in the last few years for salespeople that that maybe conventional wisdom, you know, would say this is the way to do it, but because of these economic shifts, there are things that are more important now than ever?
Well, you know, I don't, having come from a telecom background and, you know, working for the large brands, all right, I see it as farmers, right, and I see it as business development people, okay, and the people are matched properly to the role that they're in, okay, not necessarily. Farmers may look like order takers at some point, but the nurturing of a very large account, a multi-million dollar account, is hugely important to an organization, right? So I don't consider that to be an order taker. I will tell you this, all right, in the competitive market that we're in right now, for every client or every company that I speak to, right, it is critical to them that what they're spending is of paramount value, all right, to their organization. And I, you know, to answer the question without going on and on about this, because this is a huge topic for me, I don't see that particular problem, all right? What I see is that there's organizations that don't have as many salespeople as they need. They don't have what they need because of budget constraints.
Okay, so, and that's a big decision for a lot of businesses right now because we've seen a shift in businesses that used to put out a salary for their salespeople, you know, so there's a base and they're well taken care of and then commission on top of that. But these companies now are not wanting to put the base out there anymore because of these economic constraints, and they're trying to get these same talented professionals on a commission only basis.
Yeah, and that is so unfortunate. Salespeople especially, you know, as well as everyone else, have families to feed. And you really, I mean, while we have that entrepreneurial spirit, right, where we will say, yeah, I'll take half of my salary of what I should be earning or what, you know, this position should be earning, And I will absolutely, you know, put skin in the game and I'll earn the rest of it. Half is your salary and half are commissions, and that equals the entire package, right? So they have skin in the game already, and they're willing to say, I know I can earn half of that because I'm that good. Plus, just don't cap me, all right? But when you start looking at 100% commissions, it's a whole different dynamic for people, and it's something that really needs to be considered very carefully. Now, you may want, if you're in a position, you're a business owner, and you are looking at doing that, you have to really consider doing some kind of draw to get people up and running. And that's going to be over the course of 4 to 6 months. Now, depending on what it is you're selling, what is your product or service? Is it short-term cycle? If you are looking at something that takes 9 months plus to sell, I don't think a commission-only structure is going to work with you for you and getting qualified, really good people in there. And ultimately, it's going to cost you more doing that than paying base salary and getting really qualified people in.
This is where the outside counsel is absolutely a valuable resource.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So one more question. When it comes to where sales and marketing has moved to, what do you think about, you know, federal opportunities, you know, looking for government contracts?
And that's also a really great, great question. One of my differentiators at Leading Sales Solutions is that I bring to the table not only a business-to-business sales expertise, but I've spent quite a bit of time working inside of federal, which is an entirely different sales animal altogether. So all rules change. And for companies out there, and so let me also say that I work with a lot of small businesses because there is something inside of the federal contracting world that says that they are supposed to, there's no rules in terms of how much they are supposed to be spending with small businesses, but they're supposed to spend 25% of the federal budget with small businesses, all right? And so there's a number of things that you can do to get a leg up, all right? You can sign, you know, go after contracting vehicles. There's something called GSA schedules. There's partnerships. There's things called IDIQs and GWACs, and just the acronyms go on and on and on. So depending on the small business, okay, what it is you're selling, the first step that you take is the government buying what I sell? And most generally, that is going to be the case because they buy everything known to man, all right? So number one, we're fairly sure they're going to buy your service. The second question is, are you competitive? Are your prices competitive with the companies that are already there selling? So you have to do some research around that. And then number three, it's going to take you anywhere from 9 months to a year to get your first contract, unless you're exceedingly, exceedingly lucky, or you know someone in there, or you've already started to do some business development work around building relationships. So can you sustain upwards of a year of business development to get there? Okay. Now, if all these things are a yes, then I would say you need to go and talk with someone and bring someone in that can help you develop that particular, you know, line of business for your company. You can start with a consultant, and then you can eventually hire your own business development reps for federal. So questions that need to be answered up front, and then a strategy, and then pursuit.
So, Tammy, if somebody out there listening is thinking that maybe it's time for that outside counsel in their sales and marketing process and they want to reach out to you and learn a little bit more about how you could help them, how would they get in touch with you?
They can call me at, they can either call me or email me. And my phone number is 404-409-9042. And my email is thanson, H-A-N-S-O-N, at leadingsalessolutions.com. And I would love to have an introductory conversation with them, talk to them and counsel them a little bit around federal and or their business-to-business sales and marketing initiatives.
Well, I'd like to transition the conversation back here and bring Stephanie in. You know, a topic that that we brought up when Stephanie and I were talking, and I know this is hot in the sales and marketing arenas, we're talking about social media. I mean, when it comes to social media, first off, and from a sales and marketing perspective, I mean, I get it, maybe I need a fan page as a business, but from a sales and marketing perspective. Is this a real tool that I should be using inside of my business? Tim, what do you think?
Well, you know, for me, all right, my expertise is business development, engaging people, all right, being in front of them. My goal is to get you on the phone and get you to commit to meeting with me so that I can sit down and talk to you, not only about your needs, but also about what it is I do. All right, now, in today's world, it is just true that there is social media that has to be dealt with, all right? And the big three, you've got our LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. And what I tell people is that, and I'm not the social media expert, and I'm hoping Stephanie is going to chime in here in a minute, but what I'm telling them is that we don't know how we're going to be selling in 3 to 5 years. If we are not doing anything at all inside of social media, we're missing the ball. And what we have to do is put together a strategy of starting. Where do we start, right? And how much time are we going to spend, and what are our goals? And so I'm hoping that you will pipe in here and give us some information too.
I think social media is great on a personal level, on a business level. There's a lot of different ways to use it. I started because I just found it very interesting. Especially Twitter. I wanted to know why people cared if I was at Starbucks. Well, I found out they didn't. But what I did find out was there's a lot of information being shared. And as a business, what a wonderful way to share information about your business and bring traffic back to your website. What a great way to have conversations with people. Do you know that most every author that is current in today's world is out there on Twitter? You can have a conversation with an author, with a CEO of a company, with a lot of different people that are just there and amazing. They'll respond back to you. It's great. So we've kind of made our world smaller with social media, so we can reach out to a lot more people, and we can reach a lot more people with social media. So don't be afraid of it. Embrace it, and you'll be surprised what you find out, business-wise and social-wise. I think the upcoming, all the debates going on, you'll be surprised at the conversations that are going on around the presidential debates right now. It's kind of interesting. I had a client say, I thought I was just using Twitter for business, but I had so much fun at the last debate just watching what people were saying. So, you know, it's all kind of news events are out there. If earthquakes that happen, you know about them first. You know, you can be ahead of the curve on news, but it's just a very interesting conversation, and it's not trivial for the most part. There is some of that going on, but you can make it what you need it, want it to be, by the way you engage with other people.
Well, maybe you guys can share from your own perspectives, what are a couple do's and don'ts when it comes to social media?
I think you don't just put a message out there and not respond. Because people are responding to your message because they want to engage with you. So it's about engagement. And, hey, that's wonderful. We've never had this opportunity before that we could reach so many people in so many different ways that doesn't cost anything. Mm-hmm. So embrace it. Get out there and use it. And let it be what it is. You can make something more of it besides just the social part. So as a corporation, as a business, I think it's very important, especially if you have a business, what are people saying about you? Mm-hmm. And are you just going to let it sit there? If you make a mistake online, embrace that too and apologize. Because that what, you know, people see you as more than just a business that doesn't care. So even if you make a mistake, it's a great thing. So...
Well, I would like to add to that. For the do with social media, please put together a strategy, all right, in terms of how much time you're going to spend on it and which mediums you're going to use, all right? Pick three to four and stay with that. Then decide how much time you're going to spend, all right, with that and stick to it. And then make sure you have goals. What is it that you want out of it? And please, the don't here is expect that you're going to really increase your sales and like double sales or whatever. That's not going to happen, all right? What you're trying to do is build and nurture relationships with people you wouldn't normally have access to, right? That will come to fruition, that you'll get some benefit out of that. But that's the goal right now. And so if you keep those things in mind, you have a clear path, you have a plan and a strategy, and you don't overspend time, you're going to be fine with this. But the important thing is you got to get started somewhere.
Well, I agree with that. And certainly time can be really sunk into social media if you're not careful and if you don't have a plan and a commitment going in. And it can be a bottomless pit, it seems like.
It can be. Think of the time you spend on Facebook, Pinterest, different ways like that. But it's also a great learning tool.
One more convergence between the philosophies and the consulting side of this and some of the technologies available from the marketing side. What do you guys see happening or think kind of is the future of sales and marketing with some of these technologies like near-field communications and QR codes and things like that, really moving decision-making ability and information for the consumer to the point of purchase?
I'm gonna go ahead and kind of tackle this right now. So here's all right from my perspective. All right, and I'm working with business to business or business to government, and so there is this new phenomenon, and perhaps not so new, but it's called drip nurture marketing. All right, and so what this means is that I'm going to start building a list of contacts, companies that I've met through networking, whatever the case is, right? And we're going to keep in contact with these people, and we're going to nurture them, and we're going to provide them with, you know, free stuff every so often, a white paper, whatever it is, tips. I have one client that does a weekly, you know, a Tuesday tip, which is wildly, you know, popular with the folks on their marketing list. Now, there are tools out there that when I send out, or newsletters, you know, doing your newsletters are tremendously important as well, right? You're engaging people, you are giving them information, you're giving them content that they're interested in, and it's not necessarily all about you, okay? But here's the very interesting thing about drip nurture, right? You're using a tool, and it could be something along the lines of a constant contact, which I'm actually a business solutions provider and also an authorized local expert for them. It's a tool that I use for my clients. I'm sending out, say, for instance, I help a customer put together a newsletter. We send it out to a list of 5,000 people, and I can actually take a look at the results. I can see who opened that email. I can see what they clicked on, what links they clicked on. I can see whether they forwarded that email. I can see if we put that newsletter together properly with calls to action and robust content and links out to different areas, I'm going to see what they're interested in. This is a big tip here, people. Whenever you send out your newsletter, and if you see, you know, out of that 500 people, half of them are looking at something on your website that you sell, those are prospects for you that you should be picking up the phone, you know, within a couple of days and reaching out to them, right? But that's one aspect of nurture. But then there's also something called autoresponders, all right? And so that's when we've got our list, we're sending out this content, we see that someone or a group of people are looking at something in particular on links, they're clicking out, then we have our autoresponders kick in, and then within a week, well, usually I'll go 3 to 5 days, we're sending those people automatically another touch, right? So it's all, I guess, very scientific in terms of how we set this up, but we're nurturing, we're getting intelligence about what people are interested in, and then we're reacting to that, all right? Now, that's one aspect. Then there's something called preference marketing. That's where we say, for instance, I'm helping a client who has a 25,000 contact list. They don't know really what's inside that list, right? What people are interested in. So I'm putting together a survey that I'm going to survey people, all right? I want to know what you're interested in because I want to send you content and information that you are interested in. So that's preference marketing. Again, I'm segmenting those contacts I have. I'm drilling down. I'm finding out what it is they want, and I'm going to nurture that. And at some point, that's going to come back to me in terms of a client and a sale. All right?
Well, back to the using QR codes and NFC at a point of sale, that is quite often we are finding people are using their smartphones for point-of-sale purchases. A lot more purchases are being made online than people really realize. And using the NFC, which is near-field communication. And there's a little bit of cost to be involved with that, but it is basically tapping your phone against something and completing a purchase. How easy is that? You can use QR codes to scan a QR code, go straight to PayPal or a pay portal, and make a purchase. So that's like, the gum next to the cash register. It's that, quick decision that you don't even think about, and you've really made the purchase before you've thought of the ramifications. So, from a sales perspective, I think it's a kind of interesting way to think about it, where it's a different kind from where you're nurturing those clients. You're basically grabbing the clients that are right there, and they're thinking about, oh, I got to have this, before thinking about what it really means. So that's okay too. I make a lot of purchases that way and find some interesting things. So I think that we're going to see more of that, more opportunities to buy. I saw in Little Rock, Arkansas, is a brand new phenomenon going up in a mall. It's called The Wall. And if you hadn't made all your purchases, there's photographs on the wall of different items that you can scan a QR code right underneath the item and purchase that on the spot. A lot of different types of things. In South Korea, if you're in the subway systems, one of the grocery stores has placed photos on the walls. It looks like you're in a supermarket, but they're pictures of supermarket shelves with items on it. So it's merchandise just like a store, but it's photographs, it's pictures, giant wall-sized pictures of supermarket shelves that you can scan the QR code underneath using their app, make a purchase of the items that you pick, your milk and bread, instead of stopping at the store. You scan those items, and they deliver them to your house by the time you get home. How quick is that? Now, that is a great way to shop. I would love that.
Well, that's fantastic information, and certainly some things that I think is going to be valuable to our listeners. So one more time, for people that are looking for some help in these two arenas, let's talk about how they can get in touch with you. Stephanie, your contact information one more time.
Okay. I'm Stephanie Trumas. I can be contacted at stephanie@trumas.com. You can reach me on the phone at 770-833-9728. My website at trumas.com. Or if you're interested in QR codes, go to qrmedia.us and get a plethora of information on QR codes. I will be speaking at the Social Launch Conference in Atlanta, November 16th and 17th, about QR codes. The Social Launch Conference is at GTRI, Georgia Tech, and parking's free. If you go to thesociallaunch.com, you'll find out the information and how to register. And I've been told if you use QR code as a coupon code, QR code, use the word QR code, you'll get a discount in registration of $10. So good luck.
That sounds like a deal.
Love to see you there.
So Tammy, one more time, your contact information, please.
Yes. My name again is Tammy Hansen, and my phone number is 404-409-9042. My email address is thansson at leadingsalessolutions.com, and my website is www.leadingsalessolutions.com. And I also want to mention that I am conducting some seminars coming up that may be of interest to folks out there. I have two seminars coming up on the 18th of October. One is The Power of Email Marketing, and one is Social Media Marketing Made Easy. And then I am also doing on the 23rd of October, Getting Started with Constant Contact, where I will be doing a tour of the product. And so all of those are held in Alpharetta at the Georgia State University Alpharetta campus, and I'm doing those in conjunction with the Small Business Development Center. And so please contact me directly for more information.
Well, as if you don't stay busy enough, Tammy, I understand that you also like to walk for a cause. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Yes, I do walk to raise money for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. There's lots of local walks here in Atlanta, in and around, and certainly in different cities. And we raise money for, awareness programs where they go into, high schools and college campuses, and there's counselors and 800 numbers and just information information for people who might be at risk. There is one walk in particular that I'm hoping is going to come to Atlanta for 2013. It is their 18-mile overnighter. It's called Out of the Darkness Walk. I did it last year in New York with my sister. We flew up and we started walking at 7:30 at night. And we finished the walk at 3:30 in the morning. There were 2,500 people, and we raised probably close to $3 million. There were, you know, quite a few folks there. My husband went, and he was part of the crew making sure that everybody was safe, you know, during the evening and during the walk. But it's a tremendous opportunity to raise money for, you know, a really great cause that helps a lot of people. And right now, I think the Out of Darkness, the 18-mile significance is that one person every 18 minutes is committing suicide. That actually is one person every 13 minutes. So it's very, very important to become involved. And I just wanted to let everybody know that that walk is generally in June. I'd heard some rumblings that it might be in Atlanta. I certainly don't know that. But I certainly wanted to get the word out there. It's the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Thank you.
Thank you, Tammy. For those of you listening, we appreciate you tuning in each and every week here to Renegade Radio. I hope your takeaway today is really around this idea that traditionally it's thought of that if you bring in a consultant or someone to help you as an expert in an area, it's often believed that you don't have the skill set, the knowledge, or the expertise to deal with the problem. And that is just absolutely not the case. Experts and consultants are very good at just helping you come in and see a perspective that you don't currently get. It's almost like when you look in the mirror, there's no way for you to be honest with the reflection that's coming back at you. But with someone else looking, they can give you very objective advice about what's going on and where the good and bad points might potentially be for you, or in this case, your organization. So I hope that if you are in need of help with sales and marketing or media, that you reach out to Tammy, reach out to Stephanie, or reach out to another expert that you know. Bring someone in to help you gain that perspective. As always, I am your host, Andy Lowe. We are brought to you by Renegade Concepts. You can find us on the web at renegadeconcepts.com. And of course, check out our other shows at businessradiox.com and tune in each and every week here as we continue to visit with business professionals who are creating success both in their personal life and professional life by getting away from some of these traditional norms. And remember, opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.